Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Just a quick intro to PitchLink. In 2013, Serious Decisions reported 60 to 70% of content churned out by B2B marketing departments today sits unused. IDC weighed in with their own concerning statistic. Sales team members don't use as much as 80% of the content that marketing generates. We all get the picture. But how to stop the bleed? In PitchLink, marketing team can build pitches to order for sales folks and have them along the creation journey so that every pitch ever created is made to order and used. Want to know more? Sign up for a free one-on-one session. Our guest today is Anuj Adia, author of Growth Hacking for Dummies and Growth Advisor at Global Work.
People are rewarded based on their individual sort of departmental performances, right? You know, marketing cares about their leads and product cares about features and engineering cares about bugs crushed. Customer service cares about tickets closed. Sales cares about, you know, deals won. And all of those numbers are very important and should be tracked, but they should all be in the service of growing value delivered. If the product team is releasing features that is not helping more users, you know, experience more value and achieve their goals, those are not the right features to be releasing. Same with engineering. If you're crushing bugs, there are always bugs to crush. But if you're not crushing the bugs that are most in the way of users experiencing value, you're working on the wrong thing, right?
In the last couple of years, Anuj has worked exclusively with early stage startups as the first growth hire to align their processes and teams. He mentors startups at Harvard Innovation Labs, SeedStars, and the McCarthy Venture Network, where he helps startups uncover their best growth opportunities and solve early challenges. He also mentors early startup employees at First Round Fast Track. Before this, he was the category growth lead at the Predictive Index, where he owned the site that successfully launched the talent optimization category. He was also the director of engagement and analytics at Growth Hackers, where he grew the world's largest growth community, working directly with Sean Ellis, the godfather of growth hacking. Now, onto this very actionable episode with Anuj Adia. Anuj, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that I could catch you early in the morning, and I am excited to discuss, which is one of the most maligned concepts.
Yeah,
in the world. So I'm really excited. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm glad you brought that that notion up right up front, that it doesn't quite have the most favorable view in a lot of minds, which was part of the reason I even wrote the book. But excited to get into that.
Wonderful. So Anuj, before we actually jump in and start talking about the book, tell us a bit about yourself, the kind of work you've been doing, so that people can get the context, what sure. made it feasible and what made it happen that you finally wrote this book.
Got it. And so I think the story actually has to start many, many years ago in school. Because my education and degrees are in chemistry and biochemistry. And I normally get, you know, a sort of kind of smile that you just gave me, or the, you know, a very, you know, what the hell are you doing in growth look when I tell people that. And at first glance, it seems like there is no connection, which is, you know, what is normal to think. Mm. But I serendipitously landed up in growth. Mm. And I was lucky enough that that first role was with the guy who coined the phrase growth hacking, Sean Ellis. And that was simply a function of, you know, me wanting to learn more about this marketing thing when I had this crazy thought at one point that I too wanted to start up. And coming from a science background, knowing nothing about startups, and even not understanding what does even marketing do. And you read these articles on, oh, these are the top 50 people to follow on Twitter. And I was following Sean. And, you know, while I was learning, trying to learn more about this marketing thing, which seemed very important, I was shortlisting a lot of, you know, what I thought was actionable content to understand and execute on marketing and growth. I know this because this was the day my life changed, was September 30th, 2013. Because that was the one and only time Sean tweeted out, hey, we're doing this new thing called Growth Hackers, come check it out. And of the thousands of tweets I could have seen that day, that was the one I saw and clicked on, which was why it was all pure serendipity. And it turned out to be a community of people that were discussing a lot of things, including the kind of content I had been shortlisting. And, you know, you'll understand this because, you know, you're from India and I grew up in India. Like, you come with a very, you know, like, how can I, you know, extract max value with minimum effort? you know, these are big names discussing all this awesome content. I'm going to, you know, I'm not interested in this community at all. But I'll just use it like my social bookmark. Because I will throw this content on there. These big names will discuss it. It's like I'm going to get free consulting, right? And I don't want to do, I want anything to do with this community other than that. Like free learning. And not realizing that when I put something high value in there, that people like Sean would say, oh, this is awesome. You know, I learned X from it. What was your big takeaway? And I'm like, oh, now I have to actually read this and sound the reason semi-intelligent. but that was like a dopamine hit, right? That
right.
Somebody as big, you know, named as that would want to engage with a complete nobody. And want to thank them for adding value to this community. You know, it became this, ooh, like if I got it once, can I, you know, get it again? And it fortuitously happened to have 40, 50 pieces of really high value content that could be discussed on this community. And, you know, you do that every day. That's about 2 months worth of work. And before you know it, it's a habit.
Right.
And Growth Hackers is the first site you check every morning. And then you start to get ideas for how it can become better. And then you start to spot other, you know, people who are maybe not as well-intentioned as you on the platform and start telling their team about, hey, you know, you have this person who's posting spam or, you know, because I was still sort of semi-selfish that I wanted this to be the most high-value place for myself, not
right.
for any other reason. About a year into this, I got an email from them saying, you know what, stop emailing us. Here's a moderator login. Remove whatever you want, you know, do whatever you want. You can do whatever you're, other than delete the site. It's okay, we trust you. I'm like, okay. And another year after that, they were like, this is just stupid. You know, we already feel like you're like a member of the team. We should just hire you. And that's how that first role came about, very organically coming from adding value to a community. Even though I knew nothing about growth, I would read every piece of content on there. So I became like the living brain of Growth Hackers because I knew every piece of content, every discussion. And I could, you know, when people ask questions, I could say, hey, here's a piece of article that says, adds to what you're asking or answers what you're asking, or here's something that is the exact opposite. Or these two pieces are correlated and maybe people want to look at that. So even without knowing anything, just as a function of frequency, I started learning. You know, that learning was very theoretical. I, you know, didn't realize how insufficient that was until I joined Growth Hackers, because truly the only way to learn growth is to get your hands dirty and to actually, you know, do it. You know, purpose of that community was to help demystify what is this growth thing, what is growth hacking, who does it, you know, what is involved in it. Because, you know, unsurprisingly, as you alluded to in the beginning, you know, people get caught up in the hacking part of, you know, and think it's all about these spammy tactics and ways to trick people into doing things when nothing could be further from the truth, because the principles of growth hacking are all about understanding people's motivations so that you can build foundations for sustainable growth. And that word sustainable gets missed out when people talk growth. And so when people think about it in terms of tricks and spam, it doesn't stand logically, because tricks and spammy things are not sustainable.
True.
They are simply one-time things. And so that's the kind of thing the community was trying to demystify and clarify for people. And so I did that for about 4 years, where the community began as a small passion project, side project, but it blew up into the whole company. It, we became a SaaS product, online events, training, book. And I think for a while, it was maybe even the biggest growth community on the planet, and sort of that spot when people would go to. And during that time, I used to do these Ask Me Anythings, which, if people are familiar with the Reddit AMAs, sort of like
right.
that. One of the people I got on was the VP of marketing from this company called the Predictive Index, which, was an HR technology solution, again, based in Boston. And, after the AMA, we got to talking about, learning more about each other's fields. And I was saying, so how do you all think about growth? And I'm like, it's trying to align an entire team around a North Star metric, rapid experimentation to understand, how to grow value to users. And he was like, excellent, I completely get that. And, our company is how you build the team to actually execute on that. And until that moment, it had not struck me, and it was certainly underappreciated with me, that without the right people, you cannot execute on growth at all. And I took it for granted, because I was on a team with Sean Ellis, right? It worked like this very finely, well-oiled machine. And so I thought, wow, this is like the other side of the coin, right? So I'd learned the process, but this company is like the people bit, and they had come up with a very data-driven way to create teams and culture, and so I joined them next, to because I thought I could be the only person on the planet, literally, and I think I am the only person on the planet who has learned growth from Sean Ellis and has learned about how to create high-performing teams from the company that is the best at it. And so that was sort of the next year, and they were in the process of creating a new category called talent optimization. And so I owned the site that was the public-facing launch of that, where we were trying to do something similar, right? There was a product, there was training, there was a community we could build, certifications, that sort of thing. So I did that for a bit, and in the meantime, and I got a lot of these opportunities to mentor startups. Formally and informally, so this was Harvard Innovation Labs, or this accelerator out of Europe called SeedStars, which works only with founders in developing economies. And so you start to see these patterns, right, of and traps that people keep falling into, especially with early stage companies. So the last couple of years, I've been working with early stage companies, more because I love the founders so much that I think I had to work with them. And so it was a great test of, when you don't have budget, so you don't have Sean, does this fancy growth stuff still work now? Can
right.
you put it into practice? And so, and I found it works just well. The principles are strong, whether it's, selling, direct to consumer physical products on the internet, or working with HR tech, or, virtual workspaces, the principles are the same. And so that's been my journey so far. And how it all connects to the book was that actually happened, I guess, while I was just in transition between Growth Hackers and Predictive Index. And that too was serendipity, which just seems to be a theme, that I don't even know how I got onto the topic of, let me see if there's growth hacking for dummies, because I was doing some other search and I found account-based marketing for dummies. I'm like, this is a strange thing. Like it's such a niche topic.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. So that was the impetus to say, okay, who wrote Growth Hacking for Dummies? And shockingly, I couldn't find the book. And I'm like, there's something wrong with me. It's like, I've forgotten how to Google or something. Like, this can't be the case, because this is like a Grand Canyon-sized hole just there.
Right.
And it turned out there was nobody that had written it. And I was like, this book is needed because, you know, I was the dummy 6 years ago. Even though I had access to Sean and he spoke very plainly, there was nothing to talk to people like me who had zero background, you know, and just explain to them very simply. Even though there were books on growth hacking, they were very tactical books. Whereas, you know, the whole process of growth is, you know, it's a very strategic process. It's a very holistic process. You know, it's a very experimental driven process. And there weren't enough books to connect all of those pieces of how do you, you know, take a strategic approach to growth, you know, and what is the sort of cultural shift that needs to happen within companies to be able to execute on this process and let it stick. And so that is the connection to science, because Sean's insight was that growth is nothing but applying the scientific method to product and marketing. So the same experiments we all ran in labs in school, it's the exact same process. We all know how to do growth because we've all run experiments in a lab. It's just we get caught up in all these fancy words of product-led growth and growth hacking and growth marketing and whatever else. But at the end of the day, if you remember that experiments were about testing hypotheses, congratulations, you know how to do growth. And so there was nothing that talked to people in that way to say, you know this thing and, you know, here's just the other information you need to connect the dots between what you already know to how this now applies in this new context. I was lucky enough, you know, to know another Dummies author, and, you know, they introduced me to the editor in the book for Dummies. And, you know, they sent me like, okay, sounds interesting. Here's an 11-page, you know, document to pitch us. And so it was, you know, a process to convince them that, yes, this book is needed and, you know, it would sell. And, you know, clearly it worked. You know, as I was, one of the first things they make you do is create the table of contents. And as I was writing it, you know, I came to the bit about, you know, growth people and hiring for growth and creating growth teams. And, you know, as I started doing research on this topic, I found everything was anecdotal. You'll find all of these articles out there that say, oh, growth people are this amazing combination of left brain and right brain, and they're so creative and they're also analytical. I mean, this is useless. I can't use this information to, you know, hire anybody or construct a team. But again, serendipity, this is the theme, if it's, you know, not already obvious. I happened to be working at Predictive Index at that time, and they had a tool to be able to quantify work style behaviors. And so I was able to use that tool to survey growth leads to understand patterns of what great growth leads work like, the mindset they need, how do you use that to then see what is the impact on a growth team? How do you construct a team based on their strengths and weaknesses? You know, that was a huge part of the book, you know, as well, and contributed, I think, to one of the most unique parts of that book. That's, you know, basically all these pieces just fell together, you know, to connect to a career, you know, in growth, to learn the process, to learn about the people part, and, you know, then getting the opportunity to write a book that let me lean into all of those parts that ultimately resulted in the book.
This is a fantastic story, and I am going to recount this to many people as we go forward. Back to the book.
Sure.
So you decided to this bunch of serendipitous things are happening, and you obviously found this path to Willys, who are your publishers, and they have now accepted your book, and they
right.
obviously made you sort of write down a bunch of a table of content which has the chapterization. So first question
right.
is that list that you made and the final book, how close are they to each other?
Oh, very close, because they spend an inordinate amount of time on this. In fact, the first couple months was on clarifying the table of contents, because, you know, their belief, which is true, is that if you get this right, everything else follows, you know, much easier. And so I'd say maybe it's 55% the exact same thing. It's just at times, you know, you realize that sometimes, you know, in a couple of spots, you're almost duplicating the same idea. Where you and you were just calling it two different things, because as you actually start to write it out and flesh it out. And the other thing that happened in a couple of spots was, you know, as I was writing out a few concepts, you know, I'd listed maybe two things, but as I finished the first one and tried started the second one, there was this big hole connecting those two concepts, right? And that led to some additional research, but I don't recall that happening more than like two or three times. So that was, I think, the most invaluable part of that process, was spending all of that time and trying to understand the logic of why this, why X after Y, you know, and why this order makes sense.
Sure. So then let's go back to that point where you were actually sitting down and writing this table of content. What was really going through your mind? How did you think of structuring it? I mean, obviously, the influence of being in, you know, predictive index, of bringing in the people part, was very much upfront, which is why possibly it landed as chapter 3. But right. Tell me, what was it that was going through your mind when you were actually looking at creating this this structure?
Yeah, so I think two big things. So one is, you know, as I was looking at all the other books, though, one big thing that was missing was just a holistic view of the entire process. Hmm. Right? And so I wanted to capture all of those pieces, and so that, you know, you could pick this book up today or 10 years from now and it would still be applicable, because, you know, there's a framework. And so that was the first thought. And I'll say this, because the only other book that does this is Sean's book. And in fact, this was part of my pitch to Wiley, was, you know, Sean's book is great if you have some experience with product and, you know, marketing, because it clarifies, you know, how all of this applies to growth even more. And so you can think of Sean's book as the more advanced version of mine. Mine is the beginner's version of it. And, you know, but even in Sean's book, he didn't have the benefit of the people part that I had. So I knew that was a big hole anyway. So I knew I wanted to take a holistic approach to it. And I knew I wanted to connect that to the idea that this is a team sport, right? And which is why the people stuff comes, you know, first. And there's, and if you look at the structure of the book, there's something about, okay, here are basics, here's people stuff, here's the process, that the people will execute on, you know, but the people stuff ultimately then expands out into culture and company-wide adoption. Hmm. Right? So it starts with a small group that executes a process that then transforms the whole company. And so that was the bigger, you know, structure and view I had in mind that then informed the layout of chapters.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break...
I'm like the worst content creator on the planet. At my peak at Growth Hackers, maybe I think I was churning out 2 blog posts a year. I actually hate writing, which is sort of ironic for, you know, to hear from somebody who actually went and wrote a book. You know, but what I did have was, you know, this vast storehouse of, you know, resources I could use to research. Because... Okay, and you know, I don't say this with any hyperbole. I literally was the living brain of Growth Hackers. Like, I knew everything that was on the site.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. So were you actually also doing the subheads while you were writing the chapters? Were you detailing it out?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. That's why the process took so long. Because they wanted absolute clarity on, you know, what the approach is going to be.
Okay. So what next? A lot of authors I talk to would have written blogs about those concepts, would have had some material available, which they then bring together and the book is sort of put together. What was your scene? I mean, were you writing it from scratch or you already had some material there?
Oh, no, it was mostly from scratch because I'm like the worst content creator on the planet. At my peak at Growth Hackers, maybe I think I was churning out 2 blog posts a year. So I actually hate writing. Which is sort of ironic for, you know, to hear from somebody who actually went and wrote a book. You know, but what I did have was, you know, this vast storehouse of, you know, resources I could use to research. Because, okay, and you know, I don't say this with any hyperbole. I literally was the living brain of Growth Hackers. Like, I knew everything that was on the site.
Right.
And so I had mentally connected a lot of dots that I thought were missing, which I had then put into practice myself, right? So this was then more a way to sort of almost codify what I had absorbed from what, you know, Sean had taught and through practical experience, you know, and clearly we didn't do everything because not all growth concepts apply to every situation. And what I, you know, didn't have as much practical experience with, I knew there were resources I could, you know, lean on, which I, you know, had personally bookmarked or, you know, made a mental note of that whenever I want to learn about X, like this is the person I want to learn from, or these are the kind of blogs I want to go to. And in fact, I think almost all of them are reflected at the end of the book that, you know, are what I thought were the highest quality sources on, you know, whatever topic it is about growth. You know, so it was, again, it was mostly from coming from just codifying practical experience rather than, you know, something existing I had done.
Okay. And how long did it take you to actually finish the manuscript? I mean, what was your routine like? Were you writing like every day doing nothing else, or it's like every weekend? What was it like?
Oh, no, it had to be almost every day. So that was a hard lesson to learn because, you know, I got the go ahead for the book right before I joined Predictive Index. So I was starting a new job and had to write this book. And starting a new job at a hyper-growth company that had just raised $50 million and needed to accelerate. And, you know, possibly had one of the most, you know, public-facing, high-profile jobs in that company. So that was really hard to try and balance all of that. And it took me a while to figure out, you know, what is the best time to write? Because I foolishly thought first I would do this after work. And I was too tired after that. And, you know, through trial and error, I found, unfortunately, that the best time for me to write was at 5 a.m. I didn't like doing that, but, you know, it was complete peace. And, you know, I had the most energy at that time. I wouldn't say I was writing every day, but at least 3 to 4 days a week. And when I say writing, you know, I think, you know, you start off saying, oh, I know exactly what I want to write. But you start something and you'll think, okay, there's a hole in my logic here. Or, you know, the way I understand this isn't, you know, good enough. I need to do more research. So I think there was a good split between just writing and research. And I completely underestimated the amount of research I would have to do. You know, because when I wrote the table of contents, I'm like, yeah, I know this. Of course, I'm going to write about this. But then when you start writing it, you're like, okay, the way I am saying it, you know, is incomplete or too thin. I need, you know, to bolster this with some other resources.
Right.
And that entire process took about a year, close to, counting the table of contents, right? So let's say about 10 months. In fact, I submitted my last draft on December 31st, 2019. So I started writing it at the start of 2019. And literally, like, that's... and of course, there were, you know, more technical edits after that for a month or two. The book was published in April 2020, which, you know, we can get into because that was the most imperfect time to publish a book because, you know, the pandemic was hitting the world. But, you know, that's a separate rant for another time.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So let's start with the misconceptions and what, I mean, you dealt with it. But I think you're right that people get sucked into the hacking part of it and not the growth part of it. How would you define growth hacking?
Yeah, so, you know, so to me, growth hacking is, you know, the process of uncovering ways to provide more customer value through rapid experimentation. And that process has to involve the entire company. So I just want to connect that to the hacking bit for a second, because I think it's an important distinction to make. Is I think the intention Sean had with, you know, using that specific phrase was more to communicate the level of sort of relentlessness and resilience and creativity it takes to find solutions to difficult problems, right? Than, you know, this being some sort of, you know, criminal enterprise or activity. Which is what people get caught up in the Hollywood notion of the hacker who's always breaking into the government or the bank, right? But if you think about how they're doing that, is because they're coming up with very novel ways, or they have such a deep understanding of the systems they're working in, you know, that they're able to find their way. And I think that's what he was trying to communicate. And there is no way for that to happen, I think, you know, without an entire company that is focused on finding, you know, the best ways to serve its customers, because it's simple math, right? One person is less than 100 people or 10 people, right? So 10 people tackling something is always going to win over one person, right? And so that's why it's a sort of, it's a team effort, which is why, you know, the team can be as resilient and be as creative, because you have all of these ideas coming from different parts that you can then try out. Right? And I think that's what feeds, I think, the notion of, you know, how to hack growth.
This agility and the need to have the entire company focused on it, how practical is that? Because finally, you know, there are existing silos, and how does that synergy work? I mean, is it like anything else, right? Or is it a different kind of synergy we're talking about?
I think this is why I think the idea of growth revolves around growing customer value, right? Because, you know, everybody who works at any company, right, everybody's job is growth. Right? You play your role in some way or the other. And if you don't know or understand how your job contributes to growth, aka growing customer value, you should probably go talk to your manager, you know, or, you know, if that isn't clarified, you probably should go work somewhere else, because that is all any business, you know, is in the business of, is growing customer value. Right? And the way this, sort of set of silos gets broken down, you know, or it is one way, and a popular way that is done in the growth world, is through the notion of this idea of the North Star metric, right? Which is the one number that anybody in the company can point to and say, if this number is moving up and to the right, we are growing customer value, right? And I think there's a very unifying power to this number, you know, because, you know, traditionally in, you know, and why these silos come about is because people are rewarded based on their individual sort of departmental performances, right? You know, marketing cares about their leads, and product cares about features, and engineering cares about bugs crushed, customer service cares about tickets closed, sales cares about, you know, deals won. And all of those numbers are very important and should be tracked, but they should all be in the service of growing value delivered, right? So, for example, you know, if the marketing person is getting 10,000 leads a month, that is awesome. But if these are the kinds of leads that don't retain, you know, they are shitty leads, and it doesn't really matter, because if users don't retain, they will not experience more value, the business will not grow. You know, or if the product team is releasing features that is not helping more users, you know, experience more value and achieve their goals, those are not the right features to be releasing. Same with engineering. If you're crushing bugs, there are always bugs to crush. But if you're not crushing the bugs that are most in the way of users experiencing value, you're working on the wrong thing, right? So there are ways to connect what every department does directly or indirectly to how that helps, you know, deliver more value to customers, right? And I think this is why growth is a cross-functional discipline, because it helps tie in all of the disciplines and say, okay, you know, through a customer journey, you know, of experiencing product, from finding out about it to having a first experience with it, to coming back to experience the value of it, to being monetized, to, you know, being asked to refer us, through that whole journey, there will always be, you know, a problem somewhere, right? And depending on where the problem is, they will need to lean on one or more parts of the organization, you know, more than others, right? But no organization, you know, it is technically a silo, because again, product can't work without engineering, marketing can't work without sales, right? Marketing also can't work without product, because what else are they going to sell, you know, if they don't know what they're selling? So everything is connected. And I think growth and growth teams provide an opportunity to connect everybody's work and say, if you're doing X and you're doing Y, great. Firstly, do you even know you're doing X and Y? Because they're either unrelated, related, duplicated. You know, it brings everything in sync. Because then you can go and say, you know, if you're doing X and you're doing Y, let's try and understand the impact on value delivered. And, you know, if you're deciding to do something, then let's try and find opportunities to not only make sure that works, but if it doesn't work, understand what we can do otherwise based on those learnings. You know, or if it's working, let's find ways to then, you know, extract the most we can out of that.
Absolutely. How does this now tie in with the culture bit that you're talking of? So people and culture, where is that peg on which you are going to hang the growth hat, right?
Right. So I think, you know, one thing is, it goes back to what we were just talking about, right? Silos are very natural to, or I don't think, they seem to occur naturally, even though they should not. Right. And ultimately, it falls on the leadership of any organization, however small it may be, right, to sort of make the point that, you know, your work, you know, cannot be seen in isolation, and that you will be rewarded based on your impact to the customer, not based on how well you've hit some arbitrary goal that has been set for you. And, you know, that requires a great deal of trust building within an organization, because, you know, growth is all about transparency, you know, throughout the organization about what is working and what is not working. Some people like that, some people don't like that, right? And the reason people don't like that is because there are giant trust issues in an organization. And, you know, growth is, if it is anything, it is about the pursuit of truth, however good, bad, ugly that is. So for, you know, people, you know, to embrace that notion, there needs to be a storehouse of massive trust built into an organization, that whatever is being done for the customer, not to bring me down in any way or show that I am not a rock star, because, you know, everybody likes to hire rock stars and everybody likes to think they're rock stars. And of course, rock stars can never fail and rock stars never ask for help. You know, there's just a lot of ego in company, right, which is what causes silos. And, you know, I think the growth team and the leadership team together, I think, play a great path, a great part in creating that atmosphere of trust, which I think goes to, you know, creating a much healthier culture that is based on just learning, right? Because that's all it is, right? Testing and learning, that's all we care about. And so that's one part. And that, you know, is clearly, it's a very intentional effort. And it's an ongoing effort, you know, to build trust throughout the organization. And I think, again, growth plays its role there. There are other parts that are, you know, more soft skill development, more, you know, one-on-one things, which is a completely separate conversation. The second bit is, and as I discovered while I was doing the research on the people part, is that, you know, growth requires a certain way of working. Because, you know, growth is about moving very fast, right? Because when people say, what's the growth hack, right? What's the silver bullet? There is only one growth hack. And that is your ability to learn faster than your competition about what works and what doesn't work for your customers. Right? So it's that time arbitrage that you can create for yourself. But I know something the other people don't, because I learned faster. Right, it is all you have, because your competition will figure it out at some point.
Sure.
Your competition can copy your product. They can poach your team. They can poach your customers with discounts. Like, it's a brutal, ruthless world out there. Right? What they cannot take away from you is how fast you have learned. Right. Which again goes, which is how it connects the culture. If there is great trust and transparency, then the willingness to engage in this rapid, high tempo testing and learning process is that much greater. Right? Because now all the pieces will align towards, okay, here's customer value, right? What part do I play? And, you know, I think the person that leads growth has a great role to play, you know, in multiple ways, because and as I was doing research and surveyed all of these growth leads, I found that three key characteristics stood out amongst, you know, all others. One is that, you know, they're very out-of-the-box thinkers, right? So again, you know, I know I can say this because, you know, we belong to the similar age group, you know, we also Top Gun when it came out, right? And Tom Cruise's character was called Maverick. And if you look at the definition of Maverick, it is literally that. A person who is completely unbounded by rules, completely undaunted by failure, and does not think in straight lines.
Right.
It's like they see a problem, they somehow figure it out, and they'll find the most crazy solution to it, which nobody normal would think of. Right? Because most people would say, oh, the, you know, shortest distance between A and B is a straight line, and they'll say, no, no, it's a wormhole. You know, that's the shortest distance. You're like, where did you even come up with that? Right? That sort of, you know, thinker.
Right.
The second is that, you know, if anybody who spent any time in growth, you know, you know it's a lot about experimentation, and most of the experiments will fail. And in fact, almost 80% of your experiments are going to fail. So if growth is anything, it is about being slapped in the face with failure day in and day out. And again, some people can handle that. For some people, that is extremely demoralizing. And so you need somebody who can just like almost be a bulldog and say, I've caught on to this. I'm not letting go till I figure it out. Like, come what may. Right? So now you've got this out-of-the-box thinker who can move very fast, you know, who can come up with, you know, crazy solutions, and you have this, you know, resilience and, you know, bulldoggedness, you know, to that behavior. But at the same time, now you also need, you know, somebody who's a great sort of influencer, right? A persuader. Again, growth, there's a cliche, growth is a team sport, and that is absolutely correct. Because again, there's a myth, right, that there's a magical growth hacker out there who's going to wave a wand and everything will get solved.
Yeah.
Nothing could be further from the truth. Right? And if you meet somebody that says that, you know, I promise you they're lying. Because the maximum any growth person can promise you is, you know, how fast your rate of learning will be. They cannot promise you wins, they cannot promise you losses, but they can promise you we will find out fast or faster than anybody else what works and what doesn't. Right? And but you need to get everybody on board, right? Which this goes to the sort of trust, transparency, you know, but so you need this little leadership quality of being able to bring everybody along for the ride, which is not to say that, you know, they need to convince everybody of their opinion, you know, being the best, but to bring everybody along, you know, to get everybody to have this productive debate and conflict around what is the best idea, what is the best way forward, and then to rally everybody around that, which is why it's a growth team and not a growth person generally, right? To, you know, be the structure at companies, right? So when you have these qualities, you know, playing together, right, I think that's when you build the foundation, you know, of a really successful high performing growth team.
Before we wrap up, let's talk about the customer journey. What is it that we are missing? What is it that we are missing that we need to know?
So I don't know if it's missing as much as maybe not, you know, connecting all the dots. Right, because like every business, right, at the end of the day has the same problems or the same set of universe of problems. Every business has to figure out, how am I going to get people to find out about me? Once they find out about me, how do I give them a great first experience? Because let's face it, in this day and age, if there's no great first experience, there's no second experience. You're done.
Correct.
If I can give them a great first experience, you know, and let them see the value that they would get, how do I get them to come back and re-experience that value? Right, because you know, when you ask people to use something new on an ongoing basis, what we are basically saying is develop a new habit for this, which means spend some time on this, which means give up something else in your life to spend time on this. I think there's this thing that, you know, all products seem to think they belong in a vacuum and that there's, you know, nothing else in the world,
yeah,
you know, in other people's lives other than wanting to learn your product, which is nothing further from the, you know, could not be further from the truth. So how do we build those habits in, you know, for people to come back? If they can come back and re-experience value, then, you know, how do we monetize that behavior? And, you know, if they're happy paying, how do we get them to then talk about us to other people like them so that, you know, it feeds that loop to bring even more people and experience this sort of journey, right? And you know, I think for most people, I think they try to overcomplicate this, especially when they first start out. Because I think what you really need to understand is, okay, if these are the general sort of, you know, steps that people are going to follow, like, where is the biggest problem? And specifically, where is the biggest upstream problem? Because if you can solve a big upstream problem, right, then that has a knock-on impact on all the downstream steps that come after it, right? So if you can, let's say you get more people to your site and nobody signs up, right? Of course, less people will use and less people will pay and less people will refer, right? But if you can somehow make your signups go up, that will have a knock-on impact on more people using, more people paying, more people, right? It's logical. You know, I think what people miss out on many of the times is that they think they over-index on sort of quantitative analytics. They think, you know, my number will be in my Google Analytics, or it'll be in my product, and it'll be in some heat map, it'll be in something like that. And I think what people forget is that all these numbers, they only tell you what happened. To understand why it happened, you need to talk to people. And without that insight of why something is happening, you will never be able to come up with ideas for very smart hypotheses to then figure out, if I try X now, because this is the way people think, right? And this is why X is happening, right? Those tests that you do to then figure out, you know, am I going to solve a problem or optimize something? Those will never be as good.
True.
Right?
True.
So I think that balance of understanding, you know, the why and the what, so the qualitative and the quantitative, you know, I think is still not as well appreciated, I think.
Great point. So last question, Anuj, what is one takeaway that you would expect people to have when they read through the book?
If all you do after reading the book is come away with, I need to understand how to quantify customer value, and I need to understand how to then grow it, because the book lays out the process for it. Because literally everything you do should be in the service of growing value, right? Because if that is all, you know, you come away with, to me, that is a success.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Anuj, I'm very tempted, because this discussion could go on for another hour, literally. And I'll be very happy to do that, actually. So maybe I'll come back to you, make some request. I would love to have you on a longer session, maybe have some people attending it, actually, because I think there's a lot to benefit from your wisdom and your knowledge, and you can expect that I'll come back knocking.
Okay, no, thank you. I appreciate that, and more than happy to do it, because, you know, to me this is nothing but nerding out on, you know, a topic I'm, you know, reasonably passionate about. So by all means.
Thank you. It was wonderful talking to you.
Great. This was really great. So thanks for having me.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books with Park Howell, Julie Hansen, Andrea Walls, Peter Kohan, and Mike Kunkel about wonderful books they have written. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.